Welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Maureen Lewis Stump. Columbia's sewer system is aging and deteriorating. The city council took steps to address the problem, but not without controversy. KBIA's Grant Sunison has more.
17 million gallons of waste flow through Columbia's sewers every day. Beneath the streets, large metal pipes snake and twist their way across the city. Ultimately, they wind their way to Columbia's wastewater treatment plant in the southwest part of the city. Altogether, Columbia has about 695 miles of sewer pipes servicing the city. That's longer than a round trip to Chicago. But the system is old and the pipes have seen better days. The city first installed a sewer system in the early 1900s, and many of those pipes are still in use today. But a century of wear and tear has taken its toll. David Sorrell, engineering manager for the sanitary sewer utility, says the city is already noticing problems. The city's sewer utilities responded to 36 reported backups between July 1st and August 15th.
Six of those were caused by force main broken or vandalism, something like that. The other 30 were due to rainfall getting into the system. You know, the pipes are old, they're cracked, water comes in, and, well, when it rains, water in the ground, basically, it's going to find that old ditch.
Columbia City Council took notice of the problem. During the July 21st council meeting, members voted on a resolution that would delay other projects and appropriate more than $2.1 million for the Flat Branch Watershed sewer relief efforts. The plan would fund improvements to the sewer line running along Elm Street downtown all the way to the Quarry Heights neighborhood. But some residents like Mary Hussman are concerned that the resolution ignored previous promises to improve the sewer system elsewhere in the city because the council favored downtown expansion.
As I collected signatures for the repeal of the Opus project, there were two comments I heard over and over again. We don't need any more upscale student housing. Enough is enough.
The controversial Opus housing project promised $450,000 to Columbia Infrastructure, but Councilmember Carl Scala says it may not be enough to offset the strain that a large student housing complex would put on the sewer system.
If we're relieving some of the sewer downtown, we are also connected to all the rest of the sewers, and to impact an already overburdened system requires a comprehensive look at all of this relief.
The renovations to the sewer system would take an estimated 2 years, while the Opus development could be built sooner. Councilmember Ginny Chadwick supported the measure, saying it was necessary to keep up Columbia's growth plan.
From a smart growth perspective, we want to increase the number of residents who live in that area. We want to make sure that we have the capacity to do so.
The council voted 4-3 in favor of the bill. Plans to update the sewer downtown will begin soon. But the fight over sewer funds highlighted a larger issue. Not only does the city need to continue to expand the sewer system to meet demand, David Sorrell says it also needs to renovate the existing sewer that's now falling apart. The city improved a portion last year, updating more than 6 miles of pipeline. Public Works Director John Glasscock says it can be daunting because the work seems to never be truly done. Grant Sunison, KBIA News.
When Colorado legalized recreational marijuana use, it opened up the sale of food products infused with the drug to everyone over the age of 21. That means a whole new set of bakers and food companies has to ensure their products aren't contaminated with salmonella or neurovirus, and that they're not falling into the hands of children or are too potent to eat. Luke Runyon looks at how they do that.
Maureen McNamara takes her place at the front of a conference room in Denver. It's set up like a classroom, and today's students all have one thing in common. They're making, testing, and selling edible marijuana.
A few myths dispelled. Today is not a cannabis cooking class. It's about food safety.
For years, McNamara has taught kitchen staff how to wash their hands and keep food at the right temperature. But just recently, she started a side business to pass along the same information to people making food infused with THC, the psychoactive compound in marijuana. In many Colorado marijuana stores, you can find candies, chocolates, even granola bars that give you a high.
And I'm going to keep asking you to take it back to your specific operation. I do that in every class, but I think it's particularly unique for you because you're doing things differently here in the Wild West.
Not that wild, at least from a regulatory standpoint. Trainings like McNamara's are now mandatory for pot-infused food preparers, And this summer, Colorado's put in place a bevy of rules for marijuana entrepreneurs.
This is the direct result of taking a product that used to exist on the underground market and putting it into a legal regulated one.
Taylor West is deputy director of the National Cannabis Industry Association.
Now we have the impetus to do things like trainings, to be sure that everything is being handled in a professional manner. You don't have that in an illegal market.
Creating that legal regulated market, though, has presented some challenges, especially when it comes to edibles. Regulators worried pot candies would appeal to children, so they forced all foods to be sold in child-resistant packages. Washington State, also working to establish rules for recreational marijuana industry, has banned marijuana-infused candies, allowing baked goods and bottled drinks. But Lewis Koski, director of Colorado's Marijuana Enforcement Division, says another problem has cropped up: potency.
Some of the new consumers in the legalized market just were not very well informed in terms of how to safely take that product.
Since January 1st, some eager, inexperienced consumers have overindulged on the pot-infused food and then showed up in emergency rooms sweating and paranoid, or worse. Koski says that's why new rules limit the serving size of foods infused with THC and ensure the package label warns people about what they're going to eat. Koski says state law already requires a paragraph of information be included on label.
How's it going, guys? What are we thinking today, gentlemen? Something to eat, something to smoke?
And so most of the education has fallen to the pot shops themselves. Brendan Grenny welcomes two shoppers to Organic Alternatives, a recreational and medical marijuana store in Fort Collins, Colorado. Grenny is a bud tender. Yes, a bud tender. And his job is much more than running a cash register. Even with labels packed full of information, Grenny says most people don't read them. That's where he comes in.
You know, I don't know what your tolerance is. It varies by the individual and metabolism, but 10 milligrams is what we recommend on those guys.
He's talking about orange-flavored THC-infused liquids in little spray bottles, like a breath freshener. And then he moves down the line to granola bars and chocolates.
You know, I think this is fun. I think it should be fun, and I think it's safe if consumed and used the right way. And, like, this gives us an opportunity to, like, share that information with people, you know? It's not some scary back alley thing.
And Grenny says sharing that information keeps customers from having a bad high after they leave the store, which just means they'll be more likely to come back when they run out. Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
That's all for this week's Under the Microscope. I'm Maureen Lewis-Stump. Thanks for listening.